InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
For more than 80 years, the National Federation of the Blind has been the nation's leading voice for blind Americans. And today, we're joined by Chris Danielson, spokesman for the National Federation of the Blind. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us. Really appreciate it.
For listeners who may not know, what is the mission of the National Federation of the Blind?
Well, the National Federation of the Blind, as our name says, is an organization of blind people. We advance the lives of our members because we are a membership organization and of all blind people in the United States. Now, we have a particular philosophy which says that blindness is not the characteristic that defines a person or their future. And our mission is to combat low expectations, because really the problem that blind people have is that society has low expectations of what we're able to do. And those low expectations really create the barriers, not our blindness itself.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions about blindness that you'd like to clear up?
Well, I guess one of the most basic ones is that it's impossible for blind people to really do much of anything. It's hard for sighted people to appreciate, but the questions that I routinely get asked on a daily basis just are mind-boggling. I get asked whether and how I can cook for myself and how I manage to dress myself every day. And this really happens. If I go for a walk and I'm using my white cane, people will walk up to me and instead of saying hello or isn't it a nice day, they will say, where are you trying to go? As if they assume that I'm perpetually lost. So that's kind of what we're dealing with.
Many people assume blindness means a complete loss of vision, but there's a spectrum of vision loss. Can you talk about that?
I absolutely can. As a matter of fact, most blind people are not totally blind. I happen to be, but most blind people have some degree of eyesight. It's just that it is eyesight that is not particularly useful to them for one reason or another. Maybe they don't have peripheral vision, so they essentially have tunnel vision, or maybe there are other issues. Maybe they just have an extreme sensitivity to light where their eyes work pretty well, but they're so light sensitive that their eyes hurt too much and they can't handle that. Some people even have something called cortical blindness where the eyes work, but the brain isn't able to process the images properly. So although it seems like they would be able to see functionally, they can't. So there's really thousands of potential causes of blindness, and there is a spectrum of what blind people are able to see. Now, there is a legal definition of blindness, and that's traditionally 20/200, but generally there can be quite a wide range of visual acuity within that.
Our guest is Chris Danielson, spokesman for the National Federation of the Blind. Chris, technology is moving quickly. Are there new tools that are making a big difference for blind Americans today?
Absolutely. There have been for a long time, but I think we're really seeing an exponential shift. Just like in all other areas of technology, there's a lot of talk in the blindness community about AI now. And AI is really allowing some things that we haven't seen before, including the ability for me, for example, to take a picture with my phone and have that picture described to me in pretty granular detail. So I can use that function for anything from just getting a general description of a scene to getting directions off a package for food that I want to cook to reading my mail. There are really any number of uses for it. And along with the technology that we've had for years, the text-to-speech technology and things like that, it's really enhancing our independence a lot. That said, it has its limitations. Particularly in AI, we have to worry a little bit about hallucinations. I have had AI apps identify things that aren't there or misread things, so proceed with caution is always a good strategy.
Education is a big focus of your work at the National Federation of the Blind. What challenges do blind students face in schools?
Mainly, it's equal access to the information that all of their classmates can access. You know, everything's digital nowadays, and in theory, that should level the playing field, but there's a lot of inaccessible digital technology. And when we say that, what we essentially mean is that it doesn't work with the access technology that blind people use in order to read the content of websites and applications and so forth. And of course, print books have never been accessible to us, but if they're formatted properly as electronic files nowadays, they can be accessible and we can get them translated into Braille almost in an instant. But for example, it has to be an actual electronic copy of the text. It can't be for example, a scanned image of the pages of a book, because that is really just an image that we can't see. And although AI is getting better at it, it can't quite render that image and the text in that image in a way that's consistently good enough for us to use it to study with.
Chris, employment for people who are blind is still a hurdle. What steps are being taken to open more career opportunities for the blind?
Well, we have a lot of employment initiatives. We try to work directly with as many employers as we can. Usually the big hurdle is convincing employers that blind people can do the job with, you know, often very limited, minimal accommodations that don't cost very much, if any at all. And so it's just a matter of overcoming those attitudinal barriers that I talked about, but also just the concern about how much technology might cost or different things to make the work environment fully accessible to the employee.
I'm wondering if you could share a success story of someone whose life was transformed through National Federation of the Blind's programs.
Sure. I can think of a young lady. Her name is Jordan Castor. She went through one of our programs, our educational programs designed to help blind students excel in STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. She started in that program when I think she was in the eighth grade, and she's now an engineer with Apple.
Oh, wow, terrific. The white cane, it is such a powerful symbol. Can you talk about its importance?
Sure. It is a powerful symbol. It lets the world know that a person is blind and that they're moving, and therefore alerts that we can't necessarily see vehicles and so forth. But it's also a tool. It's what really allows blind people, and guide dogs as well, if that's a blind person's choice. It's what really allows a blind person to move independently. So a cane isn't just to alert others. It's what we use to feel our way through our environment, in a sense, extending our sense of touch so that we're able to detect obstacles and navigate around them and detect drop-offs and generally keep ourselves safe and able to move independently.
On a personal note, when I went to college, I befriended a gentleman who was blind, and we became very good friends. I still am in touch with him years later. He was from New York. He would go throughout Manhattan, on the subway, everywhere, with his white cane. And he had no limitations whatsoever. So,
absolutely. That's absolutely possible, even in a place as busy as New York. I've been to New York myself, and it's just a matter of acquiring the skills of using the white cane and using your listening skills and the other senses that you have to build a picture of the world that is not the same way that a sighted person sees the world, but nonetheless still gives you enough information to move through the world safely and successfully.
For sighted people who are listening, what is one simple thing they can do to be more inclusive in everyday life for the blind?
I think the simplest thing is just to remember that a blind person is a person first. And so treat them as you would anybody else. Don't start with the assumption that they will need your help or that things are going to be more difficult for them. Just speak to them as you would anybody else. If they do need help with something, they'll let you know. Otherwise, it's really not any different than interacting with anybody else. And the other thing I would say is, just like you wouldn't with another human being who wasn't blind, unless they're really about to be in serious danger, don't put your hands on a blind person without their permission. Physical contact that's unwanted and unexpected is something that really is distressing to a lot of us.
As we wrap this up, do you have any last words for our listeners about the Federation or anything else regarding the blind?
Well, if you'd like to learn more about us or find out ways that you can help, we are the National Federation of the Blind, and you can visit our website at nfb.org and find out all the ways that you can contact us. You can find the National Federation of the Blind on social media as well, and we hope that you'll reach out to us.
Well, our thanks to Chris Danielson from the National Federation of the Blind for joining us today. And once again, to learn more about their programs, advocacy, and how you can get involved, visit nfb.org. That's nfb.org. Thanks again, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
Next, support for military spouses. That story as InfoTrack continues.
There's more InfoTrack coming up. Stay tuned.